Good evening. You're listening to the Parliament of Rooks podcast, episode 33, Like a Bird on the Wire. Welcome back, everyone, to the Parliament of Rooks podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Lanise.
And this is his wife, Melanie Lanise.
So we are back to our, you know, normally scheduled programming after, you know, a couple weeks away. You know, we did our special Halloween episode there with Sugar and Spike. And then, you know, last week, obviously, we had our movie review for Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, we're getting back into our, you know, our normally, you know, chronological progression here. And actually, this particular episode sort of represents a bit of a landmark. You know, when we first came back after our hiatus, you know, I had said that it was going to be sort of touch and go as far as our, you know, weekly schedule.
You know?
And I said, you know, probably, for the first, you know, 4 weeks or so, you know, we'd be able to, like, put out weekly. Because I was looking at the Doctor Strange movie. I'm like, oh, we definitely need to hit, you know, the opening weekend there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is episode five. 5 weeks in a row, man.
Wow. Yeah, yes.
So for all you, you know, rookies out there, little fans, you know, you get a bonus episode, you know, but I think it probably is going to get a little bit dicey around like Thanksgiving and stuff like that.
It's the holidays.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens. So first things first, you know, before we get into tonight's episode, you know, I did want to wrap up a little bit of unfinished business. You mm-hmm. know, last week, obviously, we had Vanessa on, and, you know, kudos to her because she became, like, super, super prepared. You know, like, I was, like, so surprised that, you know, the amount of research she did. and so after the fact, you know, she reached out to me on Messenger, and she provided all of her citations. I mean, like, seriously,
fantastic.
Like, way above board. So you know, in order, some of the things that she was talking about were a book written by Stan Lee called Origins of of Marvel Comics. And I think that's where, you know, some of that early Steve Ditko history or whatever, and like, you know, how Doctor Strange came to be. I think she was pulling from that book.
Okay.
She also mentioned a documentary came out from the BBC called In Search of Steve Ditko. And I looked on YouTube and that documentary is actually out there. It's by
the full length.
Well, so they've broken it up into pieces. I think there's like seven bits, but they all flow one into another.
Yeah.
And it's a BBC documentary by a fellow by the name of Jonathan Ross, who, so, you know, for the benefit of our listenership, for a time, you know, I actually lived over in the UK, and you probably don't even know that name. But let me tell you, dude, Jonathan Ross is so ubiquitous in the UK.
Really?
Yeah. He is a really well-regarded interviewer, both from a content perspective, but also like well-liked by celebrities. Like people like doing his interviews. He's sort of like if you had to combine it, he sort of has the interview acumen of somebody like Charlie Rose.
That's
like,
what I was thinking you were going to say.
Yeah, like sort of like really in-depth or whatever. But at the same time, the sort of like, you know, likability of like David Letterman, sort of like that sort of irreverence, mm-hmm. you know, so it all combines in one. And like, this will mean something to you or whatever, you know, probably whenever I think of him, I think of like an absolute coup. When I was over there, he was doing an interview with Morrissey, and he actually made Morrissey laugh.
Wow.
So you know this dude like knows this stuff. So yeah, when we get up to our Hawk and Dove coverage, you know, those characters, I think beforehand we might just sit down and watch this documentary.
Yeah,
it looks pretty
we should.
Good. Yeah. Let's see. Vanessa also said she was pulling from an interview called Eisner-Miller, and I think that's when she was talking about Mr. A, right, and how Frank Miller was trying to do a revival of it. So that was a one-on-one interview conducted by a fellow by the name of Charles Brownstein. Don't know. But,
don't know.
So,
I wouldn't know him, though.
Yeah. And then finally, this, I believe, is when she was talking about the female creators in the 40s.
Uh-huh.
There was a book she was reading called From Girls to Girls, you know, the G-R-double, you know what, History of Women's Comics from Teens to Zines by a woman named Trina Robbins, who I don't know what sliver of our show we could, you know, slip a background of her into. Maybe like later on we get into Wonder Woman. But Trina Robbins is a huge feminist voice in comics. Like, you know, really she has touched like so many things and lived a fascinating life too. Like, you know, Vampirella, that's sort of like, you know, vampire, sexy alien girl or whatever.
Yeah.
She designed the costume with that, with Frank Frazetta. Like the two of them designed that together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But going back even further than that, before she was even involved professionally in comics, she actually was more of like, you know, in comic fandom. Meanwhile, she ran a little clothing boutique in San Francisco in the late 60s. providing clothes to people like Donovan. And when I was reading a little bit behind it, like, she was actually buddy-buddy with Jim Morrison.
Huh.
Like, this woman has lived a fascinating life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like I say, we'll maybe find something to spotlight on Trina Robbins.
Yeah.
So that's credit, like I say, that Vanessa provided us. But we, you know, once again, have been sort of neglectful in providing our own credits. So just a moment.
As usual.
Yeah, yeah. Going back a couple episodes, we didn't explicitly give credit for the music, but I think implicitly we did, you know, by, like, you know, referencing it or whatever.
Yeah.
So going back to episode 31, our intro music on that was was actually taken from the Paul Lynde Halloween special, which if you guys are listening
some
to this.
Swanky stuff.
Yeah, if you've never seen it, it is phenomenal. Like, you know, like, obviously Halloween's past or whatever, but next year, you know, check it out on YouTube. I mean, it is up there with, like, the Star Wars Halloween special for, you know, absolute kitsch. And so the song that we pulled was, you know, a reworked version of Paul Lynde's sort of signature song, Kids, mm-hmm. from, you know, Bye Bye Birdie, but sort of like tweaked to be Halloween specific. And then the exit music we used, you know, obviously, you know, sort of structuring it like our own Halloween special was Making It by David Naughton, which... you know,
one hit wonder,
but actually he had hits in, like, multiple venues. So, like, for those who are not familiar with him, I think when I give a little bit of background, you will know him.
Yeah, I knew him when I saw his face.
Yeah, so he had this hit song, and I mean, it was, like, top of the charts, you know, called Making It, but it was actually the theme song to a television, like a sitcom, that he fronted, which was, you know, pretty popular in the day, called Making It.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple years later, he was... immensely popular, you know, and probably his best known role as the lead guy from American Werewolf in London,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so from a Halloween perspective, that sort of, like, tied it all in. But I say most famous, but you know what? Probably more so than that was, and, you know, obviously they didn't credit for him, but after the fact, when he, you know, became a known factor, you know, going back, he was the Pepper. Okay, from the old Dr. Pepper TV commercials,
mm-hmm.
like, I'm a Pepper, you're a Pepper.
And that's actually where I recognized his face.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, totally, like, from now, totally obscure, but, like, at one point in history, just ubiquitous, like, everywhere, you know. So
yeah. I remember singing that commercial with my friends.
Yeah. So that would have been episode 31. And then episode 32, obviously, you know, the Doctor Strange movie type thing. We were sort of going for a 1960s thing. So we sandwiched, you know, our coverage between two Doors songs, you know, actually both from 1967 off of the, I guess you call it, like, titular, you know, album Strange Days, because, you know, our exit music was Strange Days off that album. But then our intro was, you know, People Are Strange.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting, like, you know, two songs mm-hmm. off that album, both, you know, with the word strange.
Yes.
But, you know, I say interesting, but I don't know, like, it's going to sound weird. Like, there's nothing specific that I'm citing here, but I have a feeling that the word strange might have been, like, part of the, like, slang at that time. Like, you know, like, obviously people know the word strange. It's not a slang word at all. But, I mean, like, you know how sometimes there'll be a word that you say, but suddenly it becomes a thing that everybody says all the time, like, awesome in the 80s.
Or cool.
Or, well, cool, yeah, certainly. But, like, I think there must have been something going on in 67 that, like, you know, the word strange was suddenly thing. Because, like, okay, you got those two. But then, like, you know, the song Strange Brew?
Yeah.
From Cream?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was earlier in the summer. A little bit later, whatever, you know, you had Grateful Dead or whatever saying, you know, what a long, strange trip it's been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, and then Doctor Strange, of course. Like, I don't know. It just, maybe I'm reading
I see what you're saying.
Too much into it, but it just seems like that word was in a lot of places at that time.
A little more popular than what it should have been, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, I don't know. It's just a little observation. But speaking of 1967, you know, that sort of brings us, you know, back into our own chronology,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when last we left our ongoing narrative, we looked at November and December stories from Strange Adventures, you know, continuing the story of Dead Man.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, I've been thinking about it, like, as much as possible, you know, we are trying to maintain a chronological narrative. You know, we want to progress, you know, forward, you know, through the years, you know, as these characters are introduced and da 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 da. But in the same respect, I think it's more important to maintain a cohesive narrative for our show. Because we're not mm-hmm. only doing the stories, we're also telling the history, we're talking about cultural trends, we're yeah. talking about, you know, artists and writers and their histories or whatever. So I think, you know, there are, I guess, a couple different avenues that we could take, you know, from this point.
Like what?
Well, certainly, you know, back when we were doing the humor thing for Sugar and Spike, I'd said that we would possibly combine that with Swing with Scooter, you mm-hmm. know, that sort of like, you know, Beatles-inspired, you know, humor feature,
yep.
you know, specifically because there were like vampiric elements in it. Well, when we got into our Sugar and Spike episode, there was just too much material. And, you know, so apologies to anybody who turned into episode 31, you know, looking for some Scooter. I don't think there's anybody who did. But, you know, that particular avenue, as more I thought about it, I'm like, you know, it actually kind of fits more with something that we're going to be covering in a little bit. You know, that being the focus on like teen type stuff. Like, you know, certainly I've mentioned the Teen Titans.
Right.
Right. And, you know, as related to Hawk and Dove. So I think when we get there, you know, I might actually do the Swing of Scooter stuff at that point. And actually it kind of ties in creatively because the initial editor and writer for the Dead Man stuff, Jack Miller, is mm-hmm. actually, you know, the writer for Scooter. So maybe we'll do a little connection
there.
Well,
that does seem fitting then.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing, you know, that we've seen referenced a couple times was the animated side of the house. You know, we'd seen those like double page spreads for the, you know, Saturday morning cartoons or whatever. Uh-huh. So in there, you know, I haven't even reviewed this. So I don't even know how much magic there is. But the Superman cartoons that we looked at in Volume 1 is now the Superman Aquaman Adventure Hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I know for you, you definitely want to check out some Aquaman cartoons, right?
Yeah, so, but maybe, I grew up with them.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, but maybe there's, you know, some magic there. So at some point, we'll look at that. And actually, you know, I said before, so it's a Superman Aquaman Adventure Hour, but then interspersed in there are little vignettes for like Hawkman and, you know, Flash, Green Lantern, whatever, but also Teen Titans. You know?
Oh.
So, yeah, so maybe I use that as a, you know, a launching point, you know, into the teen stuff. I don't know.
Or maybe vice versa. Maybe the teen stuff can
lead into the cartoons.
Right.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like I say, you know, we're still kind of fleshing this out. Another thing we got on the agenda that's around here, like I say, you know, we sort of headed into the end of 67 with, you know, the last two Dead Man stories, you know, but before that year closed out, you know, the Spectre. You know, we talked about in you know, Volume 1, he got the Spectre, exactly, got his own solo series, you know, in November of 67. So, you know, maybe we back up a little bit, do the Spectre as, you know, bouncing off a dead man, two different, you know, dead guys or whatever. Uh-huh. So yet another avenue. But all that being said, this week we're doing none of that. You know, I think it most appropriate, like I say, to maintain the you know, narrative structure of the show since we've been away from it for a couple weeks, and because it is acting as like basically the framework, you know, for this volume, I think it appropriate maybe to just delve a little bit into 68 and take a look at another Dead Man story.
Okay, good.
You're down with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So so this is actually going to be a two-parter. It's this one story, but it spreads across two issues. So definitely, you know, experimenting with the form. From Strange Adventures number 208 and 209, it's a story called How Many Times Can a Guy Die?
Again.
Right, well, as we said, like, you know,
gonna kill him.
A little reference there, you know, at least once more. Right? So, all right, so let's pull out our first issue here. Like I say, this is Strange Adventures number 208 from January of 1968. And as always, the first thing we're going to do is take a look at the cover.
Okay.
Okay, so this cover is a triple threat by Neil Adams. He has done both the penciling, inking, and coloring.
Wow.
Know? Yeah, so already, you know, Mr. Adams making himself, you know, a name to be reckoned with over at DC. And letters by Gaspar Saladino. I think normally we would see, you know, Ira Schnapp, mm-hmm. I guess, up to this point. Gaspar Saladino is generally an internal artist, or an internal letter, I should say. But I think, and I'm not entirely certain, I think I need to do a little bit more research around this. And maybe we'll get into it when we talk about, you know, the artist and writer purge or whatever from the Silver Age.
Mm-hmm.
But Ira Schnapp, I think, retires somewhere around this point. Like, he was a very, very old man. And I think Gaspar Saladino was sort of like, you know, bumped up to suddenly be the, you know, the big guy who designed logos and all that or whatever. So this might be the first, you know, glimmer of that. What we see, you know, is basically a kind of dual scene, really. You know, we have a very sort of unique, you know, for a cover or whatever. And this is, like I say, Adams really sort of revolutionizing the form, is we see a superimposed face of Dead Man acting as the background. Like, you know, it goes over the entire cover and he's just like sort of like screaming to the heavens, mm-hmm. and that acts as our background. Of course, you know, it's done like in a purple wash, of course.
Oh, well, of course.
Right. And then in the forefront, you know, we see a little bit of an action scene, you know, Dead Man in his, you know, I guess, former, you know, live days, you know, sort of grappling it out with what appears to be another aerialist, you know, and I'm imagining, you know, from the text here that this fellow's name is Eagle.
Probably. That in the outfit.
The outfit gives it away because the Gaspar Saladino, you know, penned word balloon here says, Eagle, get Eagle. He's the one who killed me. And so, you know, Boston just screaming.
Yeah, it looks like he's remembering something really painful there.
What, in the background shot?
Yeah, because, like, he's just screaming and, like, you can just see all the tension in his face.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, Neil Adams, you know, really, you know, as I said before, sort of, like, really captures that sort of raw emotion, you know. And Dead Man in particular, you know, is just a character, you know, with all that pathos. You know, you always see him sort of, like, you know, clutching his fist and, you know, shouting to the sky type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's go ahead and crack this one open here and read, How Many Times Can a Guy Die? As our opening splash page is basically a divided thing, you know, upper panel we see, you know, once again, Dead Man and Eagle grappling, you know, obviously a memory. As below, you know, we get into our narration. Can a ghost cry? Can a dead man mourn his past life and yearn for its precious moments? Ask the man who was once known as Boston Brand. We see, you know, Boston there in a very, so I guess, like, stylized graveyard. Obviously, this is not really happening. It's just sort of, like, metaphoric because, you know, each one of the headstones is a letter, you know, D-E-A-D-M-A-N is Boston. Once again, raging.
Yeah.
clutched fist. You know, somewhere out in the world of the living, breathing, eating, feeling, is the killer who turned me into a corpse. Where are you? Who are you? Why'd you do it? Why? 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 Script by Jack Miller and art by Neil Adams. Oh, actually, yeah, I'm sorry. Real credits real quick. You know, I didn't want to gloss over that. So this is written, you know, by Jack Miller as far as the script, but plotted by Carmen Infantino. I don't know if you know the difference, you know, as far as writing, like what a plot and what a script is.
Not so much.
Yeah, you know, so a plot basically is the events that happen. You know, Carmine Infantino designed this story, apparently, and I think one of the last ones he did for Dead Man, whereas the script are the actual, like, words that people say. So, you know, Carmine's here's the story, and then Jack Miller's like, okay, here's how the story would be told through words.
Got it.
Right, and so pencils and inks, obviously by Neil Adams. They're not listing color here, and I think it's doubtful that Neil Adams would have done internal colors. Letters by a dude I've never heard of, Ray Holloway. So let's maybe, you know, see if that jumps out as, like, you know, a very distinct lettering style or whether it's just a throwaway type thing.
Okay.
So we begin our story in a very sort of, you know, stylized page. You know, for the benefit of our listeners, you know, we've mentioned before, you know, Neil Adams, right from the get-go, starts experimenting with layout. So even before I get into anything going on this page, let me just describe it. We see, you know, the, I guess, screaming face of Dead Man acting once again as background. You know, you can see a sort of layered effect with the panels. Across the entire page is Dead Man screaming, why? But then overlaid on top of that is a series of panels.
Right, and there's no square panels on here at all. There's
right.
No right angles.
Yeah, yeah. There's exactly as Melanie says. You know, everything is sort of like, you know, either rounded or canted, very sort of, you know, like unique shapes. And in these, you know, unique shapes, we're seeing, once again, you know, the flashback. You know, we see Boston Brandon, you know, getting shot on the trapeze, you know, him rising from his body. I guess, you know, the initial confrontation there with Ramakrishna, you know, which is the tree talking mm-hmm. to him. And, you know, and then when he discovers that, you know, he can get inside Tiny. And then our final, you know, lower right panel, now we begin our story tonight. So even that light that surrounded the bodies he took over could not be seen by anyone but himself. But how does a man go about finding his killer when, as we pop inside Boston's head, so many guys hated me. So many guys would have liked to see me dead. Petey Martin, Bugsy what's-his-name. Joey the Lip, Sid Japes, Alfred Henderson. Boy, he's got a lot of dudes that hate him.
Yeah,
I'm like, dude,
absolutely.
He's like a circus performer. Why is somebody people trying to kill him? Sid Japes, Alfred Hennessy, Ricketts, Eagle. Eagle, he says suddenly, you know, like a bolt of inspiration. Was it you, Eagle? You said once you'd do it. Did you keep your promise? Did you? Did you do it? Did you? He's like, he's a rage ball, dude. So seared still into Dead Man's brain was that fateful day when, as Boston Brand, he returned to the circus from a night in town. This might be the very night that, you know, he was downtown at the club freakout.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That girl. So, yeah. So we go into flashback as, you know, So there was Miss Lorna looking embarrassed, an eagle looking smug and sneering. As, you know, we see Boston enter the big top and, you know, there's the whole crew and Eagle, like, okay, sneering, but he looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, just to describe it.
Nothing so, silly there.
Yeah. He's basically like, all right. So Muscle Man, Circus Muscle Man, which I don't think trapeze artists really are supposed to be that muscular to begin with. I mean, I think,
bulky muscle. Yeah, they should have lean muscle.
More slender. Exactly. But this dude's like totally bulked out and he's wearing like, how do I even describe this? A really bad costume. Like, if there were a giant bird that he skinned and is now wearing its skin, like, over his head, you know, it is like a bird's head, and then across his chest are, like, the bird's wings. I mean, it's obviously just, like, you know, a stylized leotard, but, I mean, it looks...
embarrassing.
Ludicrous. So Boston comes in all demanding, you know, "What do you mean you hired Eagle for the St. Louis stand? What about me?" As, you know, Lorna trying to defend, you know, her decision. "Please, Boston, don't get me wrong. You know what I think of you. You're the greatest ever. But for St. Louis, we need a big name. And Eagle's very big here. I figured you could team up with him, you know, just for St. Louis, sweetie. Just for St. Louis." "What's the matter, Brand?" says, you know, Eagle. "You're getting all tough. Afraid to team up with me because I might show you up?" "Don't make me laugh," says Brand. "You couldn't show up a one-armed paper hanger with an itch."
What?
No idea what that means. "Eagle, even that moniker of yours is a joke. You're more like a sparrow." And so, the two greatest acrobats of their time, though filled with hate, entrust their very lives to each other. As, I guess we go into, you know, a flashback a little bit further in time, as, you know, we see the two of them, you know, I guess running through their routine. Their narration says that soon, the only sound heard was the whispering of air passing the hurtling bodies in the empty big top. As, you know, I guess after a perfect triple somersault, you know, Dead Man goes to, you know, reach out to grab hands with Eagle. But what does Eagle do?
He fists up.
He clenches his own fist. "You dirty." But Boston Brand's hand grabs out desperately. And, you know, and as he's falling, you know, he reaches and grabs Eagle's hand. And I guess using his momentum, swings himself. Once again, for the benefit of everyone listening, the wordless panels. But really, once again, that dynamism of Neil Adams' art. Because he's grabbed the hand and I guess uses momentum to swing himself over to the, like, that trapeze platform.
Mm-hmm.
And he lands on it. He's like, "You tried to kill me, didn't you, Eagle? You wanted me to die, didn't you? Yeah, prove it." And the Eagle, you know, shouting down. So with a screaming rage filling Dead Man's heart at the sneering, airless words, as we see Dead Man, I guess, grabbing the bar on the underside of the platform above him and doing like a back spin or something, you know, like and cracking Eagle in the face with his feet. This is gonna be a little bit hard to describe all this action or whatever.
He's like in a handstand.
Yeah, exactly. So he swung himself backward, you know, and kicked him in the face. "All right, Eagle, you sniveling coward, you wanted to crack at me? Well, you got it. Let's see if this sparrow really is an eagle." "He is stupid," says Eagle, you know, throwing a punch at him and knocking him backwards. So desperately, Dead Man clutches at the tightrope as Eagle batters him until, crack, and you see him hit another, you know, fist into Dead Man's face. That's a pretty good, you know, picture of a dude getting punched in the face. You
yeah.
Know? To just try to describe this, basically you can see almost the rippling of the flesh, you know, yeah. Where, like, fist connects face.
Very good.
Yeah. So, stunned from the blow, you know, we see Boston Brand's life depends on the sheer perfection of his trained reflexes and physical strength. You know, we see him, like, holding on with one hand just to the rope. And, oh, gosh, I guess, you know, uses that strength to pull himself up onto the rope and then land on it. So, and he's balancing, like, look at that rope. Like, that's really, really good.
That's
like,
crazy.
We see Dead Man on the cable, but it's almost like you can see it, like, shaking.
Uh-huh.
Right? Ah, it's really neat. "Yeah, I'm glad you made it, Brand," says Eagle. "I was hoping this game wouldn't end too soon." So his vision unclear, Dead Man peers at the hazy form of his tormentor, unable to see the look of fear that flashed in Eagle's eyes. "Come on, Pigeon, I'm ready to end it now." As we see, I guess Boston looking at him, but, you know, like all like kind of knocked out, you know, or not knocked out, but like, you know, like confusion.
Dizzy.
Yeah, knocked into his head. You know, so just sort of like, you know, waves of dizziness. "That's it, stupid," thinks Eagle. "Come on and get your brains knocked out." But Dead Man goes low. You know, he sweeps his legs out from under him. He didn't expect that. He thinks, yeah, says Eagle is like Dead Man now kicks him off the platform. Continued on the second page following. We need to, I guess, pause from this violent scene to see the
other violent scene. Yeah, I
know. It's an ad for Mattel's new M16 Marauder. If you think this gun looks great, wait till you hear it.
Oh, great. Brah, brah, brah. So it looks real, right. Sounds real.
Well, I don't know, dude. Like, so you and I, like, you know, for everyone listening, Mel and I are both, you know, veterans. And we, you know, we obviously had M16s. Did you ever hear it go, brah, 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 brah? You know, it's like not a, you know, automatic.
And it's the wrong size. But, I mean, from a distance, without that sticker on the butt.
Sticker on the butt.
Is that all you heard?
Of the rifle. Okay. So anyway, let's get back in our story here. So still holding the trapeze. Oh, I guess he must have fallen and grabbed the trapeze. Eagle swung out over the empty circus floor. Dead Man waited until he reached the apex of his swing. And then, I guess, you know, grabbing a trapeze of his own, he jumps off the platform. Bran, what are you doing, you maniac? If we're hit, well, Bran, you madman, you're going to kill us. We're seeing, like, from the camera eye, you know, getting closer and closer to Eagle. You know, he's in far shot, medium shot, and then, like, you know, right face on
him.
Yeah. You're going to kill us both. As, with a whoomp, you know, Dead Man leaps off of his trapeze and, like, you know, his legs wrapping around Eagle throws the both of them off of the trapeze. We're going to miss the net. We're going to miss it.
It looks like they're going to miss it.
They're going to miss it. And so real quick, so I'm peeking over. So like I said, I'm looking at the original comic. Melanie, once again, is reading out of the Dead Man collection. And so mine ends on a half page split, but yours, it looks like they've extended the art, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You see the whole, you know, downward slope of the net and then, like, you know, the circus bar from the tent and everything. I just have a modeling ad, you know, that's kind of neat. I guess we've lost our AMT Corgi. Cat, but yeah, but replaced by a Corgi dog, I guess. But yeah, a couple different things, like the 67 Batmobile and then also the Bat Boat, you know, I guess you can make it a model. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. We have more Batman to watch.
Actually, it's funny you should say that because, I mean, the Batman TV series, you know, by this point was probably wrapping up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was almost done. So we flip a couple pages and wind on part two of how many times can a guy die? What's your word die in that title look like?
Kind of like yours, but yours has the color out of the words a little bit. Almost, like it's on fire.
Yeah, no, you know what? I mean, that's an offset problem. Because look, now I'm looking at the rest of it, and it looks like the red is just slightly shifted, so I think that's just a coloring error. So below the falling figures of Dead Man and Eagle, the circus people gasped. None of them was close enough to do anything to help. I guess, you know, during all this scuffle, you know, people must have come running into the tent.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to hit the net, says Lorna. Oh, they're going to be killed. Oh, Tiny. Gotta get something under him, says Tiny, you know, the strong man in his, leopard skin costume. Charlie, get that spotlight back on him, says just a dude, I imagine, him at the ringmaster or something. Gotta find something, says Tiny. That crate, maybe. So straining.
Crate.
Yes, I know, really.
That'll help.
This will soften their landing a bit, crate. So straining his prodigious strength to limit, Tiny hurled the lumbering crate across the circus ring and, they hit it clean, but so hard. As, you know, we see Eagle Dead Man crashing through the crate. Then, for what seemed like an eternity, the two figures lay on the splintering crate, unmoving and silent. Dead.
Man.
Dead man, real dead. But then slowly, the figure of Dead Man stirred, his muscles tensed and bunched. Look, he's moving. As the battered figure rose. He's alive! Boston's alive! Tiny, we gotta help him! Says Lorna, you know, rushing over, but, you know, Tiny restrains her. No, Miss Lorna, not yet. As Boston, I guess, coming back to consciousness. Eagle, get up! I want you up, so you can tell everybody that you're a sparrow. A sparrow, you hear me? Not an eagle, a sparrow. Is a sparrow like a wimpy bird or something? Like,
it's a smaller bird.
Maybe a smaller bird. So slowly, Eagle's hand closed on a plank. Tell him, says Brand, you know, in the background. But Eagle's not telling anybody anything except a crack on the head to Boston Brand as he, you know, breaks a piece of wood over it. You fool. Now I'll finish the job I started, even if I got to do it with my bare hands. And, you know, Eagle leaps for him. Oh, he caught me off guard, thinks Boston. I got to clear my head. As then, apparently, you know, with head cleared, you know, Boston goes to his knees and gives Eagle an uppercut. Sparrow, what did you expect me to sit there and wait all day? Welcome to the party. As he gets up and is pretty good now. I mean, I guess we see, like, you know, the silhouetted figures of all the circus folk almost like forming a circle around these two as the action just draws us into, like, in a very, very dynamic fight. You know, we see Boston, like, give him a body blow and Eagle, like, doubled over. As our narration says, you know, then, like an unstoppable pummeling machine, Deadman drove his fist into the staggering form of his antagonist. And he says, I want to hear it. I want everybody to hear it. Tell him what a murdering sparrow you are. Another crack, you know, across the jaw. Tell him you're not an eagle, he says, you know, grab an eagle, I guess by the beak of his little, like, helmet or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell everybody that the eagle's a sparrow and a coward. You tell them. As we turn our page and, oh, so, interesting thing before
that big panel.
Well, okay. So the double page spread, right? So an interesting thing about this age of, you know, of comics or whatever is that for a very, very, very long time, the production department of DC, you know, who, you know, is the people that do the coloring and put the pages together, or whatever, said we can never have double page spreads because from a production standpoint, we just can't do it. Neil Adams and other artists, you know, forward-thinking artists like them, are like, that's ridiculous. Here's how you can do it. And showed them basically how to line to the plate, how to use the gutter, you know, to trim or whatever.
Yeah.
And said, we totally can do this. So this might be a very, very early example in DC of a double-page spread. And now bear in mind,
the color's not even skewed on it. It looks really good.
Yeah, it looks perfect. Yeah. But, you know, for everybody listening, just to clarify, it's not a full double-page spread. But what it does is it spans two pages on a per-panel basis. So the top, you know, half of the page, you know, is one panel going across both pages. As, you know, Deadman's there, you know, grasping Eagle, you know, say it. And, you know, this, you know, Eagle's finally relented. I'm a sparrow. And, says Deadman, and I'm a coward. And then below, you know.
You can see the people in the background is kind of wincing.
Yeah, yeah, it's very painful. Oh, and just another thing before I go on describing the panels or whatever. The coloring in this, amazing. Like, you see stippling, I guess, you know, with the tiny little dots to add shadow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything across here is, like, you know, stippled to create, you know, like, really plays on the light and the shadow. You know, you see the yellow light in Deadman's face, but then the stippled shadow on the right side. And then, as Melanie says, you know, in the background, you see, you know, like, Lorna and Tiny just looking amazingly realistically, like, you know, almost ashamed.
Horrified.
Like, yeah. But, like, oh my God, like, what are we watching, you know? And so, yeah, it's great. But then now to continue what I'm saying about the double page thing on the bottom, you know, now we break into, you know, individual rectangular panels, but they too, you know, span the length of the two pages. You know, we continue our action, you know, as Deadman gives Sparrow gives Eagle. So you convince me. Yeah. He gives Eagle a push and he says, you know, now push off, Sparrow. And if I ever see a pasty face around here again, I'm going to change the way it looks.
Ooh.
But it was Eagle who had the last word as he, you know, exits the tent. He's like, I'll get you for this brand. You can count on it. I'm going to get you. As, we fade, you know, back into Deadman's memory in the present. And he's
well
thinking,
done, Neil Adams.
Yeah, sure. It could have been Eagle. He had a good reason. And he was low enough to squeeze a trigger on a guy that was only trying to earn a living. But what about that steel claw the gunman was supposed to be wearing? Ah, so what? Says Deadman once again, completely disregarding, you know, the
facts.
Yeah. Eagle wasn't dumb enough to do his dirty work in a place where he was known. He probably hired a steel clawed gunman to rub me out. Ain't that right, Eagle? Ain't that what you did? Ah, shouldn't be too hard to find you. You're too famous. Besides, you advertise wherever you are. Isn't that right, Sparrow? And if Deadman didn't know it before, he learns that in death, life is full of surprises. As he, I guess, rounds the corner and, you know, is comes face to face with a big old, you know, billboard for the Hill Brothers Circus featuring the Eagle. How could you, Lorna? Thinks Deadman. How could you hire that Fink? You knew how much he hated me. You knew he tried to kill me. As, you know, I guess the billboard must be pretty close to the circus because the next panel we see on the next page, you know, Deadman's actually strolling right into the big top. As the roar of the crowd fills Deadman with that strange, familiar feeling. Yay! You hear the crowd, you know, in the background as he walks in. That's a nice,
juxtaposition.
Juxtaposition, exactly, you know. Yay yourself. <Thanks Deadman. laughs> I got other things on my mind. Other things like Killer Eagle and Lorna. And he bypasses all this and I guess goes into Lorna's private quarters. And we see, you know, Eagle out of costume, just sort of, you know, in his, like, you know, street clothes. And he's talking to Lorna. Come on, honey. There's no saying where we two can go together. What do you say, baby? What do you say we hitch up? Yes. Get your filthy paws off her, you think? Says Dead Man, you know, overlooking the scene. What do you say, chick? Says Eagle, yeah, beginning to like paw. I said get your filthy paws off her, you dirty, rotten animal. Oh, what? What can I do? I'm a lousy, helpless, pathetic ghost.
I know what he can do.
What?
He can jump into his body.
He can jump into his body, exactly.
Like, I bet he does.
This is like two things about Deadman, right? Like, A, he's always forgetting that it's a hook that killed him. And B, he's always forgetting to use his powers.
Yep.
Our narration says, but a ghost who can feel pain, who can feel pleasure. Don't say that again to me, Eagle, says Lorna, you know, pushing him off. And don't you touch me again, you understand? Atta girl, Lorna, says Deadman from the background.
I just have to interject here because Deadman actually looks like, he usually looks pretty fierce, but in that particular panel, he looks happy. It's more disturbing.
Yeah, it's more disturbing to see him look happy.
It's really weird.
He does. Like, he's got the little like elated lines popping out of his head.
And he's kind of smiling.
Yeah. But the guy who's not smiling, though, is Eagle. You know, he's like, you better cool it, baby. Don't you put on your big airs with me. I'm the big attraction of this flea-bitten circus now, and don't you forget it. All I got to do is walk out right now, and you know what happens to your precious little circus, don't you? Throw him out, Lorna, says Deadman in the background. You don't need him. I know I need you now, Eagle, says Lorna, not realizing that what Deadman says. I know, you're the greatest aerialist in the world now that Boston Brand is gone. Boston Brand, says Eagle, you know, putting the moves back on Lorna. That guy can never hold a candle to me, baby. I want to stay here with you, but no, Lorna, this dead man. I see us as a team, says Eagle, a real team, husband and wife and partners. So be nice, baby. Give me a little kiss.
Yeah.
Come on, kid, it won't kill you. You might even like it. Oh, Eagle, please, says Lorna, like sort of recoiling, as are we. Don't Eagle, you know, we see Lorna, you know, struggling away, and who busts in but Tiny. I heard things out there. Are you okay, Miss Lorna? Tiny, says Dead Man, aren't you a sight for sore eyes? You lost your big ape, says Eagle. No one invited you in here. No, wait a minute, Eagle. I promised I was going to watch out for Miss Lorna, and I told you to get lost, says Eagle, slugging Tiny. Oof. This is Tiny, like, not even affected. He takes the punch. Look, Eagle, I don't want to fight you. But I do, says Dead Man. Make room for me, Tiny. So he suddenly remembers his powers and leaps back into his very first possessed person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he gets back inside Tiny. And now as Tiny, so this is going to be my convention here. I'm going to talk in you know, Brand's voice. So Tiny, you know, or Boston as Tiny, I should say, you know, gives him a pow. Don't try to take Boston Brand's place, Eagle. You ain't man enough to.
Ooh. There's a sudden change.
Yeah. I ain't, he says from the floor. Well, think it over, Lunkhead. Brand's dead, and I'm alive, just like I warned him he'd be dead. As, Boston as Tiny, you know, suddenly, like, does glowing. A double take, you know. Then you did do it, Eagle. You're the one who killed me. As our narration kicks in. But knowing it and proving it are two very different things. Don't miss the next astonishing episode of this amazing story of The Life of a Dead Man, exclusively in Strange Adventures. Bum, bum, bum. Cliffhanger.
Yep.
So,
gotta wait a whole month.
Whole month. We don't.
Or like just 2 minutes.
2 minutes, exactly. So yours ends, you know, on just the blank page, you know, with the Dead Man logo.
I don't get ads.
Yeah, but this ad is, we should pay attention to this because I'm thinking about, we were talking Teen Titans or whatever. We get the cartoon and Scooter stuff. We might read this story. It's not super, super magic-y, but what it is a Teen Titans take on A Christmas Carol.
That might be good.
Yeah, because it kind of ties into like ghosts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then it might act as a pretty good
intro. Like Christmas Past?
Yeah, it could be exactly. Oh, it's Christmas Carol.
I got it.
And then for our purposes, you know, it might act as a nice introduction. You can meet all the different Teen Titans and da-da-da-da-da. And actually, speaking of teen stuff, yes. I've held off on this, but let us turn the page for something I know. The teeny quiz.
Okay.
So this too is an advertisement, and we might look at this or whatever when we do, you know, the Teen Titan thing and Scooter and all this. But there was a magazine very, very briefly that DC put out that wasn't actually a comic book. It was more like Tiger Beat, I think you'd say. Something like that, you know, where you see like the young musical celebrities and interviews and stuff like that. But once again, old men trying to appeal to a young teen audience. Okay. And it was called, it's actually called two different things. I think originally it was called Teen Beat, But then they, like, within one issue, there's only two issues, they called the second one Teen Beam. I think Teen Beat might have been a real thing, and they suddenly realized that somebody else was using it.
Oh.
Yeah. So, but their little mascot was this sort of, you know, I guess mod-looking go-go chick called Teeny. And so Teeny is giving us a little quiz, and let's see if, you know, let's see answers to your questions okay, here. Okay, so, okay. Yes or no. Do you have problems communicating with the establishment?
No.
You don't?
Huh. I don't.
Do you find older people bug you about your long-haired friends?
No.
No?
Most of my old, longer-haired friends are girls.
Do the discs you play shock your parents?
No. What is a disc?
What's a disc? Do you have problems when it comes to borrowing your dad's set of wheels?
What? No, I don't like his car. You don't like
his car. Do grown-ups cop out on the clothes you wear?
What does that even mean? Do they report you to the police?
They cop out on them.
Cop right? out? No.
Yeah. Are you still looked upon as a gawky adolescent when you try to express your hang-ups?
No, I'm in my 40s.
Okay, no. Well, I'm gonna force the issue and say that I look upon you as a gawky adolescent when you try to express your hang-ups.
Thanks. Yeah.
So therefore, according to Teeny, if you answered yes to more than one of these questions, then you need instant relief from the traumas of modern day society. But in addition to that, you also then qualify for Teen Beam, where you'll get down to the real nitty gritty with a psychedelic experience.
Wait, by qualify for, do you mean I'm allowed to buy it?
So, and it only would cost you 12 cents. It's the only 12 cent Now mag in full groovy color.
12 cents well spent.
Yeah, you won't find this mag, says our you know, final tagline, unless you ask for it.
Would you have to mail in for it?
No, I don't know. Maybe you got to ask behind the counter or something. So, yes, but we will definitely maybe flip through an issue of Teen Beam. But before, you know, we do that, the next issue we should flip through would be Strange Adventures number 209, the second half of How Many Times Can a Guy Die? Actually, third and fourth part, I guess, you know, because this issue is going to start with How Many Times Can a Guy Die? Part 3.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so this would be from February 1968. From a credit perspective, I believe everything's the same. Let's see. Cover is, yeah, pencil ink, colored by Neil Adams, lettered by Gaspar Saladino. And then the inside is pencils and ink by Neil Adams, letters by Ray Holloway. I guess the only thing different, really, is that the script is by Jack Miller. So maybe at this point, Carmine was done. You know,
yep.
You already got him kicked upstairs to that, you know, editorial director job. So, yeah, Jack Miller took full lead on this. So let's go ahead and take a look at that cover, which is actually, you know, deceptively simple looking, you know, I guess you'd say. Like, it's actually, you know, quite complex from an action standpoint. You know, we see, you know, Eagle apparently tossing some dude off the top of, like, a Ferris wheel as Dead Man, you know, stand, you know, or floats, you know, aghast, you know. Oh, jumping out of the dude's body. So it looks like Dead Man had possessed this guy, but as he gets tossed off the Ferris wheel, Dead Man exits, you know, screaming, "I swore I wouldn't let him die! I swore!" But I say, you know, complex from an action standpoint, but deceptively simple, because you look at it and it's just like, you know, a quick little snapshot. You know, there's not really a lot going on there, but what is going on is, you know, quite complex from a motion standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
I agree with you. There's a lot going on, but there's something that looks a little bit old-fashioned. That's not even the right word. There's something that, like, almost harkens back a little bit into the Silver Age style.
And probably contributing to that is the fact that the background is a starfield. Yeah, it's a night scene, a starfield, but of course the sky is purple, not black. So yeah, maybe that's giving it a bit of a Silver Age thing. Oh, and you know what else? Actually, the Strange Adventures logo itself is a little old-fashioned, I gotta say. You know, that's definitely an Ira Schnapp design with the sort of, like, you know, jiggly letters or whatever. But it looks sort of out of place with this action. Like, this looks more modern than the logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and crack this open and take a look at some of the internal artwork. And our opening page is actually not a splash. Interesting. Once again, you know, experimenting a little bit. You know, we have a three-panel sequence. We see, you know, a dude, like an old man, you know, walking down a street where there is those things called playbills? Like a playbill for Dead Man, the World's Greatest Aerialist, you know, an old advertisement, you know, for the circus.
Mm-hmm.
But this old man, obviously
paper hanger.
Is that what they call them? Paper hanger?
I think.
Yeah, guys who, like, put up the posters, whatever. He's tearing it down, you know, the old one, obviously, Dead Man's passed away. And actually, really nice scene of him tearing it down. Like, look at the... Look at the shards of paper that are left as he pulls it down.
Yeah.
Like, that looks like what would happen if you really did it, right?
Yeah.
Like, really, yeah, Neil Adams is on it, man. And then in the final panel, you know, he's putting up a new poster, which, you know, let's turn the page. I dread this. As Hill Brothers Circus presents Eagle, the world's greatest aerialist.
That is not garish or tacky at all.
Yeah, I know. So our narration begins saying, "You shall live, Boston Bran, in the bodies of others until you've found your killer and avenged your murder." Ooh, that's Ramakrishna talking.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but now our narration says, not Ramakrishna. Once, Boston Bran had been on top. Now he was no more. Most dead men are lucky. In a way, they're spared the agony of watching life go on without them. But not Boston Bran. He was there when Eagle tried to fill his shoes. And when he tried to do something about it, as we rejoin our scene, you know, in medias res, you know, Boston possessing Tiny, you know, lording it over, you know, Eagle there splayed out on the floor. "That'll teach you to try to take Boston Brand's place, Eagle. You ain't man enough to." "Oh, I ain't I? Well, think this over, lunkhead," says, you know, Eagle from the floor. "Boston's dead, and I'm alive. A great dead man now. He's a dead man, just like I said he'd be." As, you know, we see Boston and his Tiny request. This is like the last couple of panels of the last thing.
Mm-hmm.
"Then you did do it, Eagle. You're the one who killed me." "Let's come over, you Tiny," says Lorna, you know, like grabbing his arm because he was about to punch him again. "Ever since Boston died, you're not the same gentleman. You're always using your fist." "Huh?" says Tiny, you know, as Boston, you know, beats feet out of his body. "I'll leave you to your own body now, Tiny. I gotta think things out." And as he does so, you know, we see Eagle getting up to his feet. "That guy's gonna use that ham fist of his just once too often." As Tiny, like, all confused, he's, like, as a lost minute because he's like, like I was saying, I don't want to fight you, Eagle. Okay, get lost. I got to talk to Miss Lorna now, in private. As Tiny leaves and he's like, "Look, baby, maybe I was wrong rushing things. You want me to lay off the love bit? Okay. Oh, thanks, Eagle. Well, let's just both forget what happened before." "Forget what happened?" says Bran, spinning around. "He killed me, you hear? He killed me. Maybe you can forget it, baby, but not me. That's asking too much of any corpse." As, you know, Eagle, again, you know, against what he just said immediately, you know, grabs Lorna by the shoulders. "But honey, you need a man taking charge around here, you know, like Boston used to do. Let me try to take his place. For you, Lorna." "Don't you believe him," says Dead Man. "He's lying through his teeth, Lorna." "Oh, thanks, Eagle. I knew you was okay. And I'd be grateful for any help you give me." "That's talking, sweetie. With me in charge, all your troubles are going to be over. But your troubles are just beginning, pal," says Dead Man, you know, following him as he exits the trailer. "And they won't end until I've nailed you, until you confess to your crime of murder, my murder. And now I'm going to smoke you out in the open, Eagle, but I'm going to need some help. Here comes Pete, one of the hands. Sorry, buddy, but I got to borrow your body. Don't worry, I'll take good care of it." As we see, you know, Boston sort of gliding down into Pete, the circus hand's body. But before we go on, just talk about this panel layout. Like, again, just something totally different, right?
It really works for the aerial view that we have of Boston coming down into Pete's body.
Yeah, what we see is basically a 5-paneled, like, step stage type thing. Like, we follow the action of Eagle coming out of the trailer and sort of, you know, walking on, like, you know, wood planks, I guess, that they've laid down, you know, to, like, protect from the mud or whatever. And, like, you know, in panel 2, we see him a little bit farther, and then...
But the wood planks line up. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, well, actually, so, yeah, if you look at the landscape, it's a solid image. Like, it's just, but you're seeing time passing through it, right?
Right.
Yeah, so, like, we see Dead Man following him, but then he changes direction, lets Eagle go that way, and you see his foot in the 4th panel exiting the thing, as now Pete is coming out of here, and then he's walking. It's really amazing.
Yeah, so, like, Eagle and Pete probably didn't even see each other.
Yeah.
But Boston sees all.
Ugh, well, what a great layout. As we turn the page, and we see now Boston, I guess, you know, in Pete, and, I guess, what's he done? He's probably snuck into Eagle's, you know, particular trailer, because he's like, "Maybe this is going to smoke you out, Sparrow." And you see him writing a little note and says, "Someone knows all about your crime, Eagle, and that someone is me!" Exclamation point. "Yeah, this should give you something to worry about, and your guilty conscience will make you start trying to cover up your tracks, making you suspicious of everybody around. And I'm going to be around, watching you every minute until you give yourself away, and then I'm going to move in on you and make you sorry you ever pulled that trigger. Gonna make you wish you were dead, Eagle.
You and your hook hand."
Yeah. "Oh, Eagle," he says, because he hears, like, the crunching, I guess, you know, Eagle coming back. "He's back sooner than I expected. I got less than 10 seconds to cut out of here. And again, just real quick, top of the next page, we see that same thing. So it's a four-panel thing, but like done in at a diagonal, you know, going upward or whatever. And what's happening is Boston is doing like a tumble roll. He falls to the ground, rolls to the edge of the tent, and then rolls out of it. Again, all four panels have the same static background. And the only thing different is that Boston's motion is carrying you through. Mm-hmm. And does carry through. Like, look.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as you go, your eye is drawn by his apparent motion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, my mouth is just like, I mean, obviously, look, I've read these before time and time again. But given our show that we have gone from basically like Murphy Anderson and that type of thing to this, I mean, it's like night and day, man.
Totally different.
Yeah. So we join Boston, I guess, still in Pete's body now outside the tent. He's thinking, you know, will my ploy work? Will it? Ah, it worked. As he sees Eagle, you know, I guess, beating feet out of the tent. Ah, he stopped. And he sees Eagle like sort of going over to a pole. What's he doing? He's tearing the note in half. Well, why is he doing that? Where's he going now? The only tent in that direction is Vashnu's. Oh my God. Ooh. I know, I got to do another voice. And we see, I guess, Eagle, you know, reach Vashnu's tent. All right, Vashnu, you're the handwriting expert here. Analyze this and tell me who wrote it, and fast. 1,000 pardons, Mr. Eagle, but to identify it, I must have something to compare it with. By the sweetness of Ramakrishna, it cannot be. As we see, like, terror just, you know, going into Vashnu's face. Who is it? Who is it? You tell me. No. Even if I believed my own senses, I would not tell you who wrote this. Nor would you believe me if I did. You idiotic faker. As outside the tent, we see, you know, Boston and Pete's body just, like, sort of, like, snickering.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, how many times can a guy die? Part 4. As, you know, we see Boston lurking back in the shadows. Looks to me like Eagle's had a cohort or two, and he's on his way to report that note I left him. We see Eagle, I guess, joining a couple hoods. Don't ask me how anybody got wise. Somebody did, that's all. And it means we better lay low for a while. We can't, not tonight anyhow. Everything's all set to go. Mike's right, Eagle. We can't turn it off now, you know, the two hoods are saying. What in blazes are these guys talking about? Says, you know, Boston is Pete and sort of creeping behind the lion's cage or something. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's time to move right now. Let's go. Whatever they're talking about, it's not my murder. I've gotten this far. I might as well go all the way. Lead on, Eagle. I'm right on your tail. Gonna have to leave Pete, though, for a while. So later, I guess, in the city, we see a bird of prey taking wing. That must be Eagle, I guess, climbing up a rope on the outside of a building. Well, well, well. The jewelry center building, says Dead Man watching on. The plot thickens.
Is he in his costume? Is that what we're seeing here?
Eagle? Yeah. Right, because in the next panel, yeah, sure enough, we see Eagle in his circus costume scaling the wall. Gotta hand it to Eagle. He is the greatest. Now that I'm gone. So after, you know, we see the bird of prey feasting, says our narration. What's he doing? He's tossing down
money bags.
Bags of, well, probably jewelry bags.
Oh, right? Didn't yeah, say probably. The yeah. There's no dollar sign on it.
Yeah. There's no gem sign either, but yeah, we'll listen. So pretty crafty, Eagle, using your aerialist skill to knock off the jewelry outfit 200 feet up in the air. Oh, I'm pretty smart, using the circus as a front for your little racket. Sure, the cops will roadblock every highway out of town, but they never dream of stopping a harmless flea-bitten circus. Smart. No wonder he wanted me out of the way, Eagle. But now it's my turn to get you out of the way. So later, that same night, his dead man has found Pete. Once again, he's entered his body. So what he's doing, he's lurking outside of the tent, I guess, where Eagle's hanging out with the hoods. Go ahead and count your loot. You're not going to keep it long, because when I turn it in personally, I'm also going to tip the cops about what you did to me, Eagle. But it isn't until just before dawn that they're finally breaking up. It's about time. The grim, patient game continues until the first streaks of light pepper the night sky. And then, he's got to be asleep by now, says, you know, Boston as Pete, creeping into the tent while Eagle's sleeping right there. Like a cat, Dead Man creeps in where... Lucky for me, they didn't divvy it all up. I'll be able to turn the loot over to the cops before they even find out it's been lifted. Huh? He says, suddenly spinning around as a hand grabs him from behind. That's not good. It's a strange panel of mine. Like, it's obviously a night scene or whatever, but it's all done in green.
Like Hulk green.
Yeah. Normally they're going with the purples, which I kind of like. I don't necessarily like this green.
No, not that particular shade.
Yeah, how's yours look over in the collective?
Mine's edition? Like flesh color, just dark.
Oh, yeah, yours actually full colored, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you can see his... Oh, I didn't even realize Pete was a blonde. He's been looking shadows.
No, I don't think he is. I think he has brown hair. I think that's just like some kind of light that's shining in from outside of the tent.
Oh, okay, a light source, sure enough. So we turn the page as our narration asks, what can be uglier than the face of a man who's holding a gun on you? As indeed, you know, I guess one of the thugs is holding a gun on, you know, Boston SP. What's going on? Says Eagle, you know, waking up in the background. It's a snooper, Eagle. One of the hands. I think his name is Pete something. You got any last words, snooper? I could say, don't shoot this body. It doesn't belong to me.
That's
the third dead man trope, though, right? So, okay. So he always forgets his power. He always forgets the hook. And he always, like, gets the body he's in, like, just about killed.
Yeah.
So, but this is no time for cracks. As, oh, he was seeing this move, too. You know, Boston pulls this sort of, like, backward elbow crack into the face. You know, whoop! There's a blam! The gun goes off. You're practically dead, pal, says Eagle, jumping out of bed. You're telling me, thinks Boston. Bad news, another goon behind me. So like twin rattlesnakes, dead man's hands strike out. He grabs, you know, Eagle, I guess, around the lapels of his ridiculous costume. So, this could make a great act, Eagle, as dead man falls to the ground and sort of like tosses him over and then gives him an extra like boost with his feet. Come on, feet, you can move faster than this. This dead man is Pete, you know, trying to beat feet out of the tent. Call the cops, he shouts out, you know, to the night watchman. What's wrong? My night watchman sounds like Jimmy Stewart. What do you want me to do, write you a letter? Call the cops. Just before we go on, though, this when he's running as Pete or whatever, this I had mentioned before how he's bound by the limitations of the body. This is kind of interesting. This is the first time we've actually seen this. Normally, he gets into a body and he's like, oh, this one works. I think Pete maybe is not as strong as he'd like him to be.
Right.
But he's strong enough, apparently, to, you know, beat feet over to the Ferris wheel and try to hide, but no can do. Here they come. Gotta stall for time, but how? We ain't licked yet, old buddy, he says, I guess, firing the Ferris wheel into action with a chung, you know, on the controller. As they start firing on him, you know, ching, you know, the ricochet's going off or whatever. Hey, stupid, ain't you ever heard that old saying, what goes up must come down? What Boston's done is, I guess he's leapt into one of the cars of the Ferris wheel, and now he's, like, swinging up. Yeah, not for a while, genius, he calls down, because like a cat, dead man leaps from cab to cab as the Ferris wheel revolves. Smart guy, says the Eagle down on the ground. Stop the wheel, I'm going after him. Apparently they power down the wheel, and once again, now we got a time-lapse thing as we see Eagle climbing up after him. How much time you got to live, wise guy? I'll tell you, wise guy, as long as it takes me to reach you, wise guy.
Say wise guy again.
You know, it reminds me of like the, was it from How I Met Your Mother? Like, you're kind of a hot shot, aren't you, hot shot?
I think I'm going to call you hot shot.
I'm going to call you hot shot because you're such a hot shot, hot shot. But Eagle, you know, apparently reaches him as we turn the page and are, you know, wowed now with a full 2-page spread. So I think maybe Adams convinced them based on last issue.
They've like, mastered it now.
Yeah, we can do it. Let's do a whole, you know, double page. And so yeah, like the center of this comic basically is a single image. Now, wise guy, no matter how much you know about me, you're never going to be able to tell anybody about it. As Eagle, you know, grabs, you know, Boston Pete, you know, around the neck. All right, you people stay back, says somebody on the ground. You know, oh, because in the bottom we see what there's Lorna and Tiny all running up.
And a third guy. And,
yeah, like well, probably the whole circus is like, you know, heard this ruckus or whatever. So we, you know, we turn the page as these, you know, as this exciting fight continues. We see Eagle, you know, punching him right across the face with a wham. Let go, blast you. Let go. Get it over with. Not just yet, Eagle.
That's like, why would he?
you know, Boston gives him a kick upward with a bock. What a strange sound effect.
Yeah.
So, but Eagle quickly recovers and, you know, with a chunk, you know, hits Pete again. For that wise guy, I'm going to pulverize you before I send you down Air Express. Yeah, Eagle is not very clever with the insults.
No, he's not.
This body's reflexes. Is Boston too slow? Indeed. You know, body can't take it much longer. Only one thing to do. And, and the thing that he does is, I guess, foreshadowed on the cover, he begins exiting. That's it, run, says, you know, Eagle. Where can you run? If I can concentrate long enough, I can go from this body to his. Oh, that's what he's doing. He's going to try to hop into Eagle. But as Dead Man leaves Pete's body, the consciousness seems to drain out of him. Oh, of course, because he's actually knocked out, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Eagle punched him or whatever, and if Pete had actually been there, he would have. The only reason he was like staying conscious is because of Dead Man's resolve.
Mm-hmm.
But with him gone, yeah, says consciousness drains out of him, and Eagle, sensing victory, prepares to hurl his opponent over the side. This is it, wise guy. Oh no, thinks Bran, not enough time to make the switch. I gotta get back in. So Deadman regains control of Pete's body, just as Eagle swings him outward, and the sign, I guess, oh, he makes a lunge for the sign on the Ferris wheel. I got it. Just hold that pose, Eagle baby, as, you know, Boston as Pete swings around for, oh, not a final kick. Look, it's amazing, you know, action or whatever, but to try to describe this verbally, I'm not even doing this justice at all. You know, like, best thing for anybody listening, just go out, buy yourself a copy of the Dead Man Collection or whatever, and look, it's beautiful, beautiful art, you know, and like, my descriptions, you know, while capturing the narrative, you know, are not going to, you know, have the same effect as actually seeing this. So as I say, you know, Boston as Pete, you know, swings around, you know, holding onto that sign and grasps Eagle around the chest, you know, with his legs and, you know, page turn as Eagle, you know, I guess counters, you know, with a blam, you know, he punches him, you know, in the face, you know, as he's holding on with his legs. This is what's next, wise guy. You got guts, buddy, but your guts ain't enough to beat me. You're finished. He hits him with another punch. Chuck. He's right, thinks Bran. I gotta fight back. Don't let me down, Pete. Don't let me down now. But whoomp, another punch right to the gut. Oh, come on, baby. Don't let him kill you the same way he killed me. Oh, my hands are like dead weights. But the flesh, says our narration, is unequal to the spirit. Mm. As with a ha, you know, he pushes Pete right off the Ferris wheel. Ah, says Boston, falling backwards. Ah, oh, Pete, because I borrowed your body, you're gonna die. But as he's falling, in the split second that, you know, Eagle's pushed him off the top of the thing before he can hit the ground, Deadman suddenly has a flash of inspiration. Tiny! He sees him on the ground. You got the muscle power to do it. If I have the time. And he's zipping down, like, you know, literally as
fast as...
In the second that he's falling, Deadman makes like a diver's plunge toward Tiny's body. And in half the time it takes a heart to make a single beat, says our narration, Deadman enters Tiny's body and... oof! Catches Pete.
Wow.
I'm speechless.
Yeah, that's insane. And also the panels on here really emphasize how that dive went. It makes it look faster.
It makes it look faster. Once again, because, yeah, so, you know, for the description or whatever, it's a page with just three panels, and not just up and down rectangular. There's sort of
mostly
like,
vertical.
Yeah, but nearly like triangular. You know, like it's almost like, you know, a sort of, you know, upward-facing triangle on the left, upward-facing triangle on the right, and then a downward-facing triangle in the center through which Boston Brand is doing his plunge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apart from the actual motion and anatomy captured in Adam's drawings, his panel layouts, his choice of shapes for the panels, also aid to the sense of motion.
Yeah, it's absolutely like, they do.
I'm so glad this was your first introduction to this artwork. You know, it's just stellar. Although, from a show perspective, this has got to be so boring. I think like half the time in our show has been like
talking about
me gushing about Neil Adams' artwork, which of course nobody's even looking at. So
maybe you'll put it on the website.
Oh yeah, maybe I'll put it on Facebook. Exactly. So what do? We turn the page and we see, you know, Eagle, you know, climbing down the Ferris wheel, you know, shouting, "You get out of the way, Tiny, or you're gonna get it too." You can't, not in front of these witnesses. Oh, I'm sorry, no, that's not Tiny talking. It's Boston as Tiny saying. No, you can't. Not in front of these witnesses. Okay, that's the way you want it. You just stay there and get blasted with the wise guy. I'm all out of tricks, thinks, you know, Boston. So Pete dies, Tiny dies, everybody dies. But nobody dies, because who shows up? The cops. All right, guys, drop those guns. Johnny on the spot. Oh, those beautiful, beautiful cops. And now, the Finger Eagle is my killer. As, you know, Boston is Tiny, makes his way over to the cop. Hey, if you look in Eagle's place, you'll find the loot from that jewelry job, Captain. And that's not all. You're telling me that's not all, says the captain. I know it. Eagle pulled the same kind of caper on the West Coast back on September 10th. But that's the day I was killed, thinks Boston.
Mm.
Then it wasn't Eagle who did it. Then who did? Who did? He says, you know, exiting Tiny and like, you know, storming off. It's looking like Tiny in the background.
He's confused again.
He's like, what's happening to me lately? Why do I keep losing time? Who did indeed, says our narration. Maybe we'll all find out in the weirdest tale of them all, Hide and Seek, in the fantastic next issue of Strange Adventures.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. So not really a cliffhanger, but actually kind of a nice ending for that episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know? What'd you think?
Good.
Yeah,
it's good. Really like action-packed. It was done very effectively. I like the expression on everybody's face. It's Very well done.
Yeah, I'm actually like, I know it's going to sound weird to say, but I'm actually a little breathless from like reading that story.
Really?
It was exciting, man. Like, you know, because maybe it's because I'm like, you know, being the storyteller or whatever, and I'm like putting myself into each one of these personalities. I'm going back and forth and whatever, but I sort of get caught up in the action describing this or whatever. You know, I feel like, you know, mm-hmm. we just witnessed an exciting fight. So before we go into our final review though, let's flip through this mag and see if there's anything else of note. Oh, actually, no, I know for a fact there is. Let's flip through and find it. It's actually just on the very next page. Strange but True. So you've seen a couple of these as we've gone through, but we haven't actually read them because normally they're just little text features or whatever about like, you know, other weird stuff going on. You know, the mag's Strange Adventures. But in this one, we have a note, you know, from the editor himself, you know, which, you know, I guess would be Jack Miller at this point,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, also was the scripter in the last story. And so he addresses us directly saying, an editor surrenders. Personally, I prefer those quote unquote strange but true paragraphs. And in all fairness, so do quite a few of you readers, judging from the mail. In all likelihood, I would have gone right on running the strange tales if it weren't for Dead Man. Now, you ask, how could a fictional character in a new feature be responsible for changing things? Well, it's this way. Dead Man has literally opened the floodgates to a torrent of fan letters that's smashing all records around the DC offices. That's,
wow.
That's awesome, right? And almost without exception, each letter winds up with a plaintive plea to the editor to please, please, please open your text space to fan letters. Actually, I arrived at the decision to run a letter page for the last issue, and you may be astonished to learn why I did put it off. It was because I couldn't think of a suitable title. The longer I racked my brain for a heading, the emptier my head became. And if you glance up at the top of this page, you'll notice I still don't have a title, because it still says Strange But True.
Yep, got it.
So, he says, I figured, if you readers are so anxious to have a letter page, how about coming up with a title for it? The best one I came up with turned out to be the title of a competitor's magazine. That's when I decided to quit. I wonder what it could be, though. Like, I'm trying to think. Oh, maybe Strange Tales? Maybe Strange Tales. Maybe it was the Doctor Strange thing?
It could be.
You know, or like... Certainly not Tales for the Crypt, because that would have been canceled by this point because of the code.
Right.
Yeah. No, okay, I got to do some research to find out what that was. But he goes on, naturally, the name of the one who turns in the winning title will get full credit, plus a liberal number of pages of Neil Adams' fantastic artwork. Oh my gosh!
Wow.
Yeah. There will be some original artwork for the runners-up, too. That's amazing. Oh, I wonder who did. If you're interested in reading a sampling of the letters responsible for my change of heart, here are a few from the top of the pile. So... we have our very first Dead Man fan letter, okay?
Okay.
And you might suspect that the writer of this letter might be somebody important, you know, as is the pattern with our show.
Because that's why you picked them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't pick this. This is just the first letter ever written by about Dead Man.
Oh.
So, dear editor, after having read comics for over 16 years, I can honestly say that Dead Man is, without a doubt, the greatest character I've ever seen. The concept is tremendous. The story was the old-fashioned hit-him-in-the-guts type that has been needed in comics. The art, well, it was the greatest. Never did I expect such an adult theme in a comic mag, and your handling of it was unbeatable. In the ending letters of this kind, most writers say, keep up the good work. I'm not going to. I'm sure you know exactly what you've got a hold of. Don't change it. Signed, Marvin Wolfman from Flushing, New York. And so this is Marvin, but then the editor says, you know, thanks, Marv. The original concept is the brainchild of Arnold Drake, one of DC's better scripters. He and Carmine Infantino put their heads together for the pilot story and set a standard for all writers and artists to follow. Okay, so I'm going to pause just right here. So I'm assuming you don't know who Marv Wolfman is.
No.
Right, okay. So a little bit of background. Marv Wolfman is... probably most famously known on the DC side as the creator of the 80s iteration of the Teen Titans. Like, you don't even know the Teen Titans themselves yet, but, you know, once we get into it, you know, you'll meet Robin and Kid Flash and, you know, Wonder Girl and whatever. And so in the 80s, he sort of reinvented them as, like, a more mature title, like, you know, a little bit older and, you know, a little, you know, art by a fellow by the name of George Perez. And together, this team of, like, Wolfman and Perez... basically made Teen Titans in the 80s DC's best-selling title.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, it was number one. And then additionally, they became so popular that their big mega event for 1985, which is basically the 50th anniversary of DC Comics, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They had this thing called, you know, so you and I have looked at a couple of the JLA-JSA crossovers, right? You know, Crisis on Earth 1, Crisis on Earth 2, Crisis on Earth A. Well, that's going to continue... for years and years, and there's going to be crisis on all these different Earths. And eventually, in 1985, they have this big mega event that runs 12 issues across the entire year called Crisis on Infinite Earths, where every character who was ever published by DC Comics is in this massive,
all out,
you know, time spanning, world spanning crossover. George Perez draws them all. Marv Wolfman writes them all. So, you know, and so,
wow.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going to be a biggie. But then more interestingly for our show, you know, because we do Magic and the Supernatural, he's going to come to DC, I think, probably within a year to do a couple, you know, intro writing tales. But he doesn't stay very long. He actually goes to the Marvel side. And, you know, prior to coming back to DC in the 80s, has a very long run on one of their horror titles called, I think it's called Tales of Dracula, or Tomb of Dracula, I think.
Okay.
But he is the creator of a character in that who fights vampires. Now, can you imagine a Marvel character who fights vampires?
Yeah, of course. You mean like Blade?
Blade, exactly. So yes, Marv Wolfman is also the creator of Blade.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's just funny. So once again, you know, we have Roy Thomas, we had Jerry Bales, we had E. Nelson Bridwell. Now we got a letter here from Marv Wolfman. So it's very cool. Let's see. Look at our next one here. Dear editor, I must send my compliments for the new creation, Dead Man. The plot and handling at a human touch a reader can feel. I'm sure I joined many thousands of comic and... I'm sure I joined with the many thousands of comic fandom in shouting. That's still not written well.
It's odd.
Anyway, long live Dead Man. Signed Michael R. A. Drake
from Druckmann.
It says Michael R. A. And so when I read that, but in my head, I made a little joke. It's like Michael, really Arnold Drake. He's right because it's his. Oh, but the editor says that. He's like, no relation to Arnold, are you? That's too funny. So anyway, then another. Actually, I am going to read that. I was going to just read those two, but I do want to read this one here. Dear editor, no doubt from somewhere in comic fandom, the outraged cry will rise that Dead Man is just a copy of the now tremendously successful Spectre. True, the origin of Dead Man in Strange Adventures 205 resembles in many ways the Golden Age origin of the Spectre as recounted in the showcase tryouts in recent months, which we've read,
mm-hmm.
Right? There are significant differences, however. The character of Ramakrishna, the powers of Dead Man, and the odd manner in which Boston Brand pursues his revenge, which, with the proper development, can make Dead Man a unique feature successful on its own merits. Artistically, the first three issues of Dead Man have been somewhat varied, of course, you know, because he started with Carmen Infantino and then went to Neil Adams.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the second one was Adams inked by Rousseau, so yeah, all three were different. But the cover of your third offering was one of the most outstanding covers I've ever seen, which was the one where Dead Man was awash in the sea of faces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The layout was powerfully balanced and simple, the penciling and inking well-rendered, and the coloring quite eye-catching. I wish to thank you for the three offerings of Dead Man, and good luck with those to come. Robert Metcalf, Baltimore, Maryland. I don't know who that dude is or whatever, but I wanted to read it because the Spectre thing caught my eye.
The comparison.
Yeah, right? So, like, this dude's like, you know, probably people are going to compare it to the Spectre, but I'm just going to say that no, there's no comparison. Why do you even bring it up, dude?
Right, yeah. It's a long letter, too,
yeah.
Compared to the others.
So... and so with that, I might as well just like, you know, blow the lid open or whatever. You know, it's actually a nice transition because, you know, I said at the beginning of the show, there's a couple different avenues that yep. we could possibly pursue. So what I'm thinking we should do.
Wait, let me guess.
What do you think?
Are we going to read Spectre next?
I think we should. Right? It's 'cause, yeah, so this sort of runs parallel, as I say, with Spectre getting his own title. So I think appropriate at this point to branch out and like compare and contrast, you know,
because Robert Metcalf wrote in.
So, yeah, we're going to shut Robert Metcalf of Baltimore, Maryland up 50 years after the
totally different.
So, yeah, so we'll take a look at that next time. But for this time, let me turn it over to you, you know, for your discussion of the stories we read tonight and your, affiliated judgments. I'm assuming you're going to want to take a look at both of these issues as a single story.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it just, you know, spans.
Yeah, part 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
Yeah, so how many times can a guy die? What are your thoughts, Ms. Parliament?
But first, I feel like I should kind of answer how many times can a guy die? At least once more.
At least once more.
Now, as I already alluded to, it's they're very well done. I was really struck with how, like, I've seen panels not be square before, square or rectangular. But I mean, the use of it in here is really it's really a cut above what we've seen. It's remarkable, and if you can, then you should really look these up.
Yeah, there's a couple different formats you probably could. So, like I say, we have the hardcover Dead Man Collection. That certainly, I think, was the first one. But then additionally, it was collected. DC did a series of, like, they called it prestige format. Like, they were a regular comic book, but it had a little bit of a harder stock cover. And they what they would do is reprint some of their more famous runs. Like, I think they did Jack Kirby's New Gods. I feel like they did maybe a Dr. Fate one thing. I can't remember, you know, what issues were included in that. Marshall Rogers' Batman, I think, was collected in something like that. But then certainly Dead Man, I think, was in a 7-issue prestige series. And they would have like 2 or 3 of these issues per issue of that. So you could probably find those in like a quarter bin somewhere. And then additionally, in more recent years, they have begun collecting the entire like saga of Deadman. I think like every story ever appeared in a series of trade paperbacks, and the entirety of this initial arc, I think, is in volumes 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So you can get that. Long story short, you know, many, many different formats. So if you've never read the Deadman story and this podcast inspired you to do so, absolutely go pick it up. It's well worth your time.
Yeah, I mean, and not only would you see the different shaped panels, but you'd also see that 2-page spread and the artwork in general. Like, what you find in the panels is pretty spectacular.
Pretty spectacular, yeah. Apart from the artwork, what did you think about the ongoing narrative?
Your voices. Oh, my God.
I was the Vashon who took me by surprise. Like, I knew I had to do Eagle, and so I was like trying to think, like, he's from St. Louis. I mean, that's not really the South or whatever, but I kind of wanted to make him cocky, so I tried to give him a little bit of Texan. I don't know that I can, you know, do it very well, but, you know, hopefully it stood out.
Yeah, I think it did. He came across as very sleazy the way you did it, and I think that was intended. Yeah, but I mean, just how it's written, like the actual dialogue between the characters, just, you know, seems appropriate for the time. And definitely, you know, between like what they wrote and how you performed it was excellent.
Well, credit where credit's due. I mean, to be honest, I have found it a little bit easier to do the voices for this Dead Man arc because the characters are so well formed. I mean, I look at the page and I can hear them in my head, you know, the way that I think they would sound. Like Tiny, I mean, how else is it going to sound? Oh, like that, you know, like, it's, you know, and like, and Lorna, you know, is kind of like, you know, from the wrong side of the tracks, like, oh, Boston, you know, like that.
Yeah, I gotta say, she reminds me of one of my old relatives.
Oh, really? Oh, because of the hair. She's got that bouffant hair.
Well, not just that, but the voice that you're using.
Oh, it's too funny.
Yeah, so I'm not going to say who, but.
but apart from that, though, what did you think about the story itself?
It's good. It's tight. It's very interesting, and it flows well.
Yeah, I'm wondering, thus far we sort of see Boston's search for the Hook. You know, I guess it was sort of beginning to spiral out a little bit. Like, he started at the circus, and he's like wandering a little bit farther afield. You know, with each subsequent thing. Like, you know, he went to a little club down in the town, and then he was actually probably in a different town by this point. Happened to come back across to the circus or whatever. Do you think at some point he's going to like move beyond the circus, you know, backdrop, and like, you know, his world's gonna become a little wider? What are your thoughts about where it's going?
You mean like, instead, like, he was in another town, like, is he gonna like cross state lines?
Yeah, well, so, but like, I'm saying thus far, you know, almost every episode we're seeing Lorna, we're seeing Tiny. You do think that's gonna get bigger and like, you know,
he's, oh, and interact with other people?
Yeah,
probably. I mean, as he's like in search for his killer, I would say he's going to, like, get into a, like, because there's a lot of these issues, so he's going to, the cast of characters has to get bigger.
And that means more voices.
And more voices for you.
So, all right, but with that in mind, I guess just for tonight, you know, what are, you, do you want to issue your final judgment on, you know, how many times can a guy die, or do you have more to say about it in the way of, you know, analysis, or?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much done with all that. It was spectacular, and I think that, you know, so, but I'm going to kill the bird anyway. No, I'm kidding.
Well, if the bird is Eagle, maybe you should.
No, I mean, the bird obviously lives on this one. This is probably one of the best stories we've gone through so far.
Awesome. Good deal. All right. So I think that will wrap it up for tonight. Let's take a moment, I guess, and, you know, review again our contact information. This episode and, you know, and all others like it, you know, you can feel free to comment on them at our website, which is
tporpodcast.com.
tporpodcast.com. And then, but, you know, more to the point, you know, if you'd like to do it in a little bit longer form, you know, you'd like to say something more than just a brief comment, you can write us, you know, any, you know, Nature of Letter at our email address, which is
tporpodcast@gmail.com.
You know, you can compare us to other podcasts and say, you know, like, many people would think that you're a ripoff of, you know, such and such podcast, but I'm here to say what I am. You'd be like, what's that, Robert Metcalf? Or yeah. So, you know, so yeah, that's our email address. You can follow us on Twitter.
At TPOR Podcast.
Right, exactly. At symbol TPOR Podcast. And then you can join our Facebook group, which has been a little more active. I've been trying to, like, you know, post more, like, links and photographs and stuff over there. And that would be facebook.com/TPOR Podcast. You can subscribe to us at many different places. What are some of them, Melanie?
iTunes.
iTunes, certainly. Anything else?
You only know the one.
Well, that is Melanie's podcatcher of choice, but you know, you can also subscribe to us.
I guess there are others.
Yes, at Google Play or Stitcher Radio or
Podcastopedia.
Podcastopedia, very good. So yes, you can find us any of those places. You know, or you can just join us here, you know, on a one-off basis, you know, week after week, you know, just download them individually. So with that in mind, that's all I have for tonight. We want to thank you, as always, you know, for joining us. We hope you had a good time, and we hope to see you here next time on the Parliament of Rooks podcast.
Eagle!